Moving forward, we discussed that we would talk about well-being in a confined space. And obviously, crew live in a confined space, but at the moment, the whole world is living in a confined space. But what are your thoughts around that?
I mean, one of the, I'd say the general ways that I like to look at well-being is you can think of every thought in your mind as a fuel. Yeah, everything you do with your body is a potential fuel for the body. Everything you put into your mouth is a potential fuel for the body. But particularly every thought that we have, you could say, is a fuel for the spirit or for the mind. And so it's kind of interesting. The story of the Buddha is quite an interesting one. He was born into royalty. He left royalty. He became an ascetic and kind of had this wild life. And in the end of days, when the Buddha was said to have reached enlightenment, he was living a very simple life, and some of his greatest insights were to come while he was just sweeping the floor or cleaning the house or moving his, you know, boat back and forth across the river. He was a ferryman who would right towards the end there. And I think there's a lot of insight in that. So it's not so much what we do or where we live or, you know, the external elements of ourselves, but it's the internal space, I think, plays an enormous role. So how is it that we sweep the floor? What is it that we're thinking when we sweep the floor? Mm. What is it that we're feeding ourselves? And certainly the physical is an obvious place. Like, we do need to move. We need to take care of ourselves, and we don't want to depress ourselves and, you know, kind of put too many loads on the body. So there's that whole piece, which I think most of us have a good sense of. Like, we know what's good for the body and what's not. But the internal space to me is enormous. So, you know, you finally get done with your shift and you're in your bed at night. It's like, what is that time? What are you feeding yourself then? Is it coming through social media? Is it kind of this kind of quick fix kind of stuff? Is it just mindless activity? Or is it an amazing book? You know, is it one of the most amazing spiritual teachers that lives on the planet? That you're kind of, you know, reading into and feeding yourself. And I think if we think about, like, what we put in, we're going to get out. Mm. If whether it's food, whether it's movement, whether it's mind, whatever it is that we're focusing on, wherever we're placing the biggest emphasis, it tends to be exactly what we're going to get out. So if you're noticing that you're not feeling well, mm. I would just start putting good fuel into the body in all the ways that you can. We have so many tools these days with things like Audible. I'm happy to share maybe a list of my favorite books. You can listen if you're like me and you don't like reading any more than you already do. You can, of course, read books and you can just stimulate. One of the things I notice about retreats is oftentimes people come in and there's a tendency to feel like life is kind of a one-way street, mm-hmm. you know, especially as we get older. You know, there's a tendency to believe that the body's just going to slowly degrade and the mind's just going to degrade and life's going to get crappier and crappier until we die. Mm-hmm. And what I know is that that's absolutely not the case. What we're doing with our days and the way we're spending each moment and the choices we're making through our days makes an enormous difference in how we feel. And so even small changes, you'll notice this kind of reinvigoration and these levels of shift happening inside. So yeah, I'm a big fan of just noticing. You know, one example would be, you know, if you put a ton of attention into the stock market, mm-hmm. and you were all constantly researching and investing and ups and downs, and you were, you know, that was a place where you put, say, 80% of your time. Mm. There's a good chance that when the stock market goes up, your mood would go up, or if your investments anyways went up. Mm. And if the stock market went down, your mood would go down, right? Not a rule, but there's a very good chance that your mood and your happiness and your contentment, okay. and your whole life assessment would be attached to the stock market. Mm. The same is true with anything. If you put all that attention into a partner, and if the partner was mad at you, you were upset. And if the partner was happy, then you were happy. The same sort of thing. We can attach ourselves, we can put our energy into certain things, and those things will take us up and down, and they'll take us on our ride. So noticing where you place your attention, what is it that you value most, what are you feeding within yourself and within your days, what belief structures, what patterns, and then just play with shifting, play with changing those.
And it does, it takes a bit of determination, I would say, to do that, because it's so easy to get hooked into things, whether it's other people's vibrations or what situations that are happening around us. And I think it requires a self-awareness to realize what you're being hooked to, and then making a conscious decision to unhook yourself and focus back and within and what's important to you, rather than feeling subjected or influenced by what's happening around you and losing that sense of control.
It's
very difficult, especially when you live in a confined space and say your boss is continuously in a bad mood or micromanaging you or negative, just making negative comments about everything, and immediately that does make you feel crap, and it's really hard to push against that. And what I found is compassion helps me alleviate that stress that I feel like I'm surrounded by, the negative energy, and feeling for that person and feeling, I don't know if so, empathy is when you can put yourself in someone else's shoes, but I can understand for a situation like that, it's very hard to imagine why that person is the way they are without any background information. But actually feeling compassion or sorry for them really helps you detach yourself from that scenario. That's what I've found.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. They say that hurt people hurt people.
Yes.
And so if you can see that anyone, even if they're just being, you know, a bit annoyed or frustrated, or shallow, or, whatever it is that you're observing in someone else, if you can relate, if you've ever been shallow or you've ever been annoyed or angry, and you can relate to the way they're feeling, then you know that they're not feeling well. Mm. And it doesn't feel good to them either, you know. One of my teachers, Byron Katie, she says, imagine that everyone else is the Buddha. So the person that comes to you with anger, imagine that they're the Buddha in disguise, and that they've been sent just to give you an opportunity to be something different. You know, if you have a pattern, I would say a very common pattern for myself is that if somebody's angry with me, there's a tendency towards, say defensiveness or eventually anger back. Mm. Right. And then the question would become, is there another way? Is that the only possibility that I have in that moment? Or can I play this game of seeing the Buddha in front of me as the teacher offering me an opportunity to, be compassionate, as you mentioned, or to find another way. And I think the key to it, the hardest thing I think for most of us is that when we hear that kind of suggestion, it almost feels like you're asking me not to care, or you're asking me to roll over or to be a doormat or something of that sort. Mm. And I would say it's definitely not the case. I think, we can be compassionate and we can set boundaries. We can be compassionate and we can communicate clearly. We can be compassionate and still take care of ourselves and, keep ourselves out of harm's way and make decisions for ourselves and move through life in a way that still benefits us and keeps us healthy.
Mm. And even in those scenarios, you could ask yourself, well, what can I do that's opposite to my immediate reaction? So you feel like ignoring them or being angry back at them, but asking yourself, well, what can I do differently? And I think you'd find the answer would be kindness. How can I show them kindness? And I think at the end of the day, as you said, hurt people, they're just after kindness and love because they haven't had it and they can't give it to themselves. Therefore they can't give it to anyone else.
Mm.
And in a way,
I mean, we all think that we're trying to make things better. Like when you use, if you've ever used anger in your life and you think about those moments, you were in an attempt to make things better. It's just the wrong tool for the job. It's like you've picked up anger and started hammering away at somebody, and it just is, it's the wrong use of a tool, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Human behavior, I just love it. It's so interesting. And particularly with prisoners, the more resistant they were, the more excited I got about working with them, because I know that there's so much potential for change and everyone's capable of change as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about this stuff is you can, you know, your own life is all, my own life certainly is the playground for all of this. And so, you know, COVID-19 is a great example of a space within which we can play, you know. Mm. For me, if I'm really, you know, if I come down and I'm in my day-to-day moments, like I still had breakfast this morning, the sun still shone, you know, the birds still are flying around outside. And so when I come home to the essence of life today, it's like COVID-19 mostly is a concern about a potential tomorrow. And I can feed myself so much news about this illness, and I can read every article and all the stats and all the stories and what's happening in all the different countries and all of that stuff. And it's a burden, you know, like I really think in these days, especially, I mean, you know, this would be true, you know, in confined spaces always, but there just seems to be a lot more of us now that are at home. We're being asked to stay there. And so we have our screens, we have these devices that have an endless amount of content, and we really have to become wise at how we use them, because they're designed to be, you know, to hold our attention. You watch a kid with a screen and you see just how potent and powerful these things are. And so, yeah, that's been a real topic for my wife and I lately, is how much news is the right amount of news, and how is it that we, you know, can move through this as being just the current obstacle.
And what have you decided, or what does the discussion look like at the moment?
Well, in terms of digital detox, there's certainly different ways to do it. Some people do a digital Sabbath where they'll take a full day off and kind of put all the screens away. For us, we tend to do the evening. So there's once we go into bed, we basically become a bit of a reminder for each other. And we say, okay, like we say defang, you know, from a class that I teach called Defang Your Thing, which is all about making your phones less addictive. But so we basically remind each other, we say defang. In other words, like, let's turn off our screens. So for us, bedtime, basically, once we enter the bedroom, and that might be, say, a half an hour before bed or something, and then, you know, same sort of thing when we wake up, and we just keep our screens off. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, I think each of us personally within our own, you know, practices, probably we do it slightly differently. I try to keep my news consumption to once a day.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I think the habit could be any, for some of us, news wouldn't be the thing. For some of us, it might be shopping, or for some of us, it might be the stock market. And so we can just notice within ourselves, where is it that we maybe just spend time that we think could be better spent, and begin to create a tailored fingerprint as to how we want to manage that.